Unlock a new era in podcasting with Unfiltered Studios. Ready to break free from the ordinary? Dive into a world where authenticity meets innovation. Our network isn't just about podcasts. It's a revolution. From nostalgia to movies, sports to self-improvement, find your favorite podcast in an array of diverse shows, only at Unfiltered Studios. Join the movement. Subscribe to Unfiltered Studios today and join the podcasting revolution. Unfiltered Studios, where every voice finds its place. Visit unfpod.com today to find your favorite show.
Unfiltered Studios will help you press record.
Hello, movie lovers, and welcome to the show. Tonight, we're going to be reviewing and doing a deep dive into the 1994 cult classic, The Crow, starring Brandon Lee. I have my good friend Tamika with me. We're going to go on ahead and rock out with The Crow. I hope that you guys enjoy this. I'm excited to be able to do this review. This is hands down my all-time favorite film, aside from Jaws. So let's go on ahead, let's review The Crow. And hey, Tamika, how are you?
Hey, what's going on?
Hey, nothing much. Just relaxing a little bit, you know. Maybe getting my guitar up on the roof. But, you know, just basically going to take my guitar, play a little guitar on the roof, and then smash it later on after I got the guitar riff right.
Oh, okay. I hope it's the like, right. Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah. Just like how I was that's like how I was trying to learn that a couple of years back when I was playing guitar.
You smash your guitar on the roof?
No. My parents would kill me. But
what about the pet crow? Is he going to be there?
I had a stuffed animal. That was close enough.
Yep, okay.
So anyways, everyone, welcome to our review of The Crow. And so my question for you is, when was like the first time that you actually seen The Crow?
It was high school. What was that? I'm trying to think. Was it like 99? Was it 2000? 2000? Mm-hmm. Something. Yeah, I was in my goth punk phase. And then I saw The Crow. It probably came on like, TNT or, you know, one of those networks.
Yeah, like TBS, TNT, somewhere around there.
Yeah, I think it came on something like that. And then I saw it and then I was captivated immediately. And the soundtrack was cool. And I was like, oh, and my emo feelings. And I was like, oh my God, this is like the greatest thing ever. And I was like, I must get this this soundtrack, you know, the CD. And actually, the guy, he was like my friend, the guy that, it's a guy in my high school that looked exactly like Top Dollar.
Oh, nice.
He had the long hair and everything, and all the women.
Just like anybody in the 90s or early 2000s would have, right? Yeah, like an FYE or Sam Goody.
Like you could like cut his face, like they were identical twins. And he had like the long hair and stuff. And I probably like message him and tell him I talked about him on.
So did he say this? Dad gave me this for my fifth birthday. He said, childhood's over the moment you know you're going to die. Did he say that to you?
No. I told him, you look like the guy from The Crow. He's like, yeah. He didn't do that, but.
Okay, so my first time seeing The Crow, I was actually 10 years old.
Wait, we're the same age, John.
Yeah, we are. But here's the thing. I think I peaked at age like age 10. I went to see this movie at the movie theater with my mom. I remember seeing the previews on TV. I'm like, Mom, I want to go see The Crow. And I just fell in love with the story overall. Like, this is the thing that got me into like Nine Inch Nails. It got me into STP. It got me into basically every single era of music that you can think of during that time. The soundtrack is just amazing. I love the soundtrack to this movie. Brandon Lee playing Eric Draven. And then the storyline, like you said, it had this melancholy kind of feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And it just sucks you right in. It has that gothic kind of feel to it. And it feels like this movie is for me. This movie understands me, even though I was age 10. But this movie understands me. This movie gets me. And ever since then, I've been basically collecting different types of Blu-rays, DVDs, posters, things like that. I want the movie poster. But yeah.
Yes. Excellent.
But yeah, that's where it started off for me at age 10 in the movie theater, watching with my mom, and then my mom going looking at me. So you enjoy that? I said, yeah, I did. Did you? Uh-huh. Yeah, I enjoy it. She didn't enjoy it. But no. Anyways, I did.
No. It you know, it also has the feel of Batman, like 1989 yep. Batman. Like, that's what the set reminded me of. So I'm surprised Tim Burton didn't jump in on this movie, because it's similar styles to him.
There are similar gothic styles to it, yeah. But it's also very different, though, in scale and the way that you look at it, though, too.
Mm-hmm.
Compared to how Burton does his movies back in those days, too.
Yeah.
But I like how this director does it, and he does an amazing job with it. And matter of fact, Brandon Lee wanted to do this on black and white.
Really?
To get the lighting. Yeah.
Wow.
He wanted to get the lighting and everything right according to how the comic book was, because it was in black and white.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit of a fun fact on it. But let's dive into it. Let's dive into this. So, in the shadows of a city surrounded in darkness, a lone figure emerges from the mist. His face is painted with markings of a crow and a symbol of vengeance and justice. He is Eric Draven, returned from the dead to seek revenge on those who talk about this on a podcast and those who took everything from him. Welcome to the Movie Lovers Unite podcast. We're going to be diving into The Crow scene by scene, and we're also going to do some fun trivia facts that Tamika has. I actually typed out.
Yeah, I got them.
Okay. So we're going to dive into that a little later. But let's go ahead. Let's dive into it scene by scene. And so it starts off with basically everything's on fire. All these buildings are on fire.
Mm-hmm.
I like how they have that display, right? Of the crow going through this toy, kind of like, because of the fact that how they had to make it was like, basically they actually made like a toy miniature style of actually the way they were shooting it. In a sense, of following the crow and stuff like that. And then you get that whole entire scene where it's the cops inside the house and you see the windows broken.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty cool. But also, too, this is also the quote that it says, people once believe that someone dies, a crow carries their soul to the land of the dead. But sometimes something so bad happens that a terrible sadness is carried with it and the soul can rest. Then sometimes, just sometimes, the crow can bring that soul back to put the wrong things right. On October 30th, Devil's Night in Detroit, Sergeant Albert is at the scene of the crime where Shelby Webster has been beaten and raped, and her fiancé, local musician and guitarist Eric Draven, died. Having been stabbed and shot and thrown out of the window, the couple were to be married the next day on Halloween. As he leaves for the hospital with Shelly, Albert meets a young girl, Sarah, who says that she is their friend and that they take care of her because her mother, Darla, is negligent and a drug addict. Albert tells her that Shelly will be okay, but she knows the truth. Shelly is going to die. And I like how she looks at Albert and goes, we're going to be okay. She's going to die, isn't she? And I like how he just looks at her and goes, yeah. She's going to. But also, too, what did you think of the whole entire scene of seeing the window?
Yeah.
And you see this crime scene, because that's a weird way to start a movie off.
Yeah, it is. I haven't seen it in years and years until like recently when we're doing this show. And I was like, dang, this is darker than I remember. No, I don't know. I was like, dang. Oh, my God. Beat and rape. Dang. Ugh. But, it's a good opening to the story, though. Like, you have to kind of start out with it, the tragedy of it all, like the aftermath. And it feels like the whole movie is like a detective story, in a sense. He's trying to figure out who did what. Brandon, the crow, Eric Draven.
Right, Eric Draven, yeah.
He's like a detective, you know, kind of like reminds me of Batman, but he kills people.
Ben Affleck killed people, okay, on the Zack Snyder one.
Whatever. Anyway, it's like he kills people, you know, but he has a crow with him, so Batman doesn't have a pet with him.
No.
cancel out your argument. But anyway, yeah, that's what it feels like to me. Like, no, we start out with the tragedy of the what happened and the aftermath, and then you're going backwards from there. Like, okay, who done it? Who did what? What's going on? So yeah, we're along for the ride with Eric, and he doesn't know what's going on. And
just like how we don't know what's going on.
Yeah,
and we're trying to solve this case with them.
Yeah, we're solving the case. We killing people.
I'm just witnessing something. I'm not telling anybody. I'm just witnessing.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's, yeah, we witnessed something, but we ain't tell the cops. We ain't talk to no cops.
We ain't no snitch. But
we ain't snitching. No, I ain't getting no crows after me. Speaking of which, at my job, there are a lot of crows, so I wonder what that means.
I don't know, but okay. I just want to say this. I thought that Ernie Hudson playing Albrecht, he does a fantastic job of selling you as that cop.
Yeah.
He's this good cop. And also, too, the captain's over there busting his balls, and too, being a total jerk-off, ball bag, and everything. And he winds up just basically goes, telling him, hey, aren't you supposed to be a beat cop or something like that, to that effect? And then he's like, well, I got you to thank for that, don't I?
Mm-hmm.
And then I like how Sarah's just basically knowing what's going on. She already knows that Shelly's going to die. And she's already embraced the fact that she's going to die, and that's just sad to see that happen. And then just the way that he just plays that, of that caring cop, it just melts my heart every single time I see that scene.
Mm-hmm. Now, was this after Ghostbusters?
What was after the Ghostbusters? Right. After Ghostbusters, because Ghostbusters 2 was like, I forgot what year Ghostbusters 2 came out.
I only asked that because I'm jumping around, sorry. But there's a scene where he was like, are you a ghost?
Yeah, 89 was when Ghostbusters 2 came out. So this is a couple of years later.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's when he asked Eric Draven, are you a ghost?
Ghost. Boo. Yeah.
Boo. And then he opened some beer for him.
Yeah. Like he did ghost. He also tells him smoking is bad for him too.
Yeah, you know, don't you want a ghost to open a beer for you? You had a hard day at work. Here you go. And then you asked the ghost.
Some makeup on?
Yeah, did you pay the rent, ghost?
Okay. This is my house. But anyways, 1 year later to the day, a crow taps on the gravestone of Eric Draven. Eric awakens from the death and climbs directly out of the grave, trembling and racking in convenience. Meanwhile, a criminal gang headed by T-Bird are setting fires in the city. Eric goes to his old apartment and finds it in distress. Now, the introduction to T-Bird in them was really good because you don't know who these characters are. And then it goes, Arcade is going to go boom. And he goes, fire it up. I feel like I was at a Rob Zombie concert for that one.
Yes, and it's the classic tropes of all the henchmen. And then you got the wannabe in there. You could tell who he is. Because then they like, go get something. Go get some smoke. I forgot that guy's name. Like the only one that was kind of alive before the crow. Yeah, that's the wannabe. But everybody else was kind of like a tough guy. Then you had the meth head. And you had the black guy with the knives.
But you know what, though? I think that with T-Bird, but I like how it sets the tone on what we're getting as to why. Who's we're getting a little bit of a glimpse of who's setting these fires and why they're doing it because of Devil's Night, and we'll get into a little bit about what Devil's Night is, because it's actually something that's true. It's actually something that happens in happened in Detroit and everything. So we're gonna get you know what, since I'm already on the topic of that, we're just going to talk about it. So the roots of Devil's Night was actually murky. But may have started with a yearly tradition called Mischief Night. Mischief started in the 18th century Britain. And by the mid-20th century, pranksters in Detroit had started relatively mild forms of disturbances and destructions around the city on October 30th. The tradition had taken such a significant hold by the 1970s that the Free Press published a guide for readers called How to Beat the Devil and a Goblin-Proof Their Homes. Instructions included tips on how to respond to a variety of Devil Night pranks. And I lost my notes. Hold on. But the tradition had taken such a significant hold by the 1970s. Okay, so it brings one popular Detroit goblin trick to beware of. If someone throws a lighted paper on your porch, do not rush to stomp it out. There may be animal droppings inside. Oh. And then, but okay, so then we're going to go into this. These pranks became increasingly more destructive over the years. The Free Press reported vandals smashing 99 windows in 72 city buses, vandalizing 84 homes, and 8 instances of arson in 1978. Destruction only worsened into the 1980s. So that's a little small detail of what Devil's Night is.
Wow. Gee whiz. Okay.
So, but yeah, so you get T-Bird. He's over there. He's bombing the arcade games. Mm-hmm. And then you have Eric coming out of the grave in the stormy night. I like how the lightning is, it just feels like a horror movie. After a year of him dying, everybody's supposed to forget about him. No one's supposed to remember him. Sarah's over visiting his grave before that happens. Mm-hmm. The crow comes over there, taps, and just looks at her. Because what are you supposed to be, like the night watchman? And then...
he said, bitch, I might be.
Just watch. What am I going to do next?
Sassy.
I'm going to pop out of this grave. That's what I'm going to do.
Tell him, Chris.
But I like that horror aspect to it of this guy, of this person coming out of the grave. Mm-hmm. Then he winds up finding boots in a garbage dumpster. And he's very distraughted. He's trying to basically get back to how he was. Trying to walk again and stuff. And then he goes over to his home, and then you see his whole entire apartment still in disarray. You see the police tape still on the door. And I like how they give the camera angle of that first person PIV thing.
I was going to say that, yeah.
I really love that.
Now, there's opening the door, and we're seeing where he is. And I think it's really cool, too, how it's almost like a superhero. Well, it is. It's a comic book, but it's almost like a superhero power where any object he touches, he gets the memory of what happened that night.
It's like the crow is trying to make him remember why he's here. He's here for a purpose. Yeah. You have unfinished business to be doing.
Yeah, to kill people.
Yeah, to that killed, murdered, raped, and threw you out the window.
Yeah. And they probably did something to that crow too. And he's like, I want you to kill them.
But that's a story for another day. Yeah. But yeah, he has visuals and memories of the murders, remembering that those responsible were T-Bird and his gang, Tintin, Fun Boy, and Skang. Eric soon discovers that any wounds he receives heals immediately, and that he, being dead, is now immune to physical harm. He then replaces his brute burial clothes with dark and imposing attire, and using stage makeup paints in his face in a parody of porcelain harlequin mask given to Shelley as a gift, decorating his lips and eyes with black scar-like slashes. Guided by the crow, he sets out to avenge his and Shelley's murders by killing their perpetrators. So I like how it sets up where you see flashbacks of him and Shelley cooking. Of her burning the food and then laughing about it. And then you see the glimpse of, you know, basically of everything else that happened, where basically there was like an eviction notice or some type of notice, because T-Bird winds up pointing that out to them. And then it goes into the whole rape scene, and then Eric coming in, and then they wind up throwing Eric out the window, and you see Eric fall out the window, and you're seeing everything being played out now, how we got in that opening scene, how we're trying to figure things out. So now we got some missing pieces that are now being filled. Then you also have, I like how he goes over to the window that he was thrown out of, and then he winds up doing like a chin up, and he winds up like flipping like his father, like Bruce Lee would. And then he winds up discovering that his hands can he can heal. He's immortal. And then he puts on the makeup and everything, and you have that great song by The Cure called The Burn. You're ready to go. This thing, this is how you know this is the movie that's for you.
I was gonna ask you, what is the name of that when the music plays in the background, like as the narrative? Because every song, in movies, because every song plays along with the narrative of the film, like
like the scoring or the soundtrack,
something like that. Because, like, as soon as he put the makeup on, the lyrics said, just paint your face and
it's foreshadowing.
Yeah, it's something like that. Yeah. You like the Cure, Tamika, duh.
I just thought
that was neat, and it seems really prevalent in 90s films that they have like the soundtrack playing along with the narrative of the film. And I don't know if today's movies do that too much.
Not as much. Like, there's not much that does that nowadays. And that's something that I do appreciate, the fact that they took their time to do something like that.
Yeah.
And then I like how the lightning strikes on his face, and then you have the crow on his shoulder.
Yeah.
And the fun fact, too, is this. That's actually his stunt double. That's actually Brandon Lee's stunt double. And they had to actually CGI the face and everything the best they could to their ability to make it work.
Oh. I was reading a little bit about that because I got curious. I wasn't sure exactly what scenes he finished before he died.
I think I do have a little bit of that because I didn't give you that part of the trivia part, but I will cover that towards the end of it on the scenes and even in the scene that he supposedly died and they had it cut.
Okay, got it.
So I'll go into that like towards the end of our review, but you know, and then of course now you're set to go. He's on the rooftops. He's running, and I really love how the camera angles just play it off. This whole entire rooftop scene, it is awesome as hell. And then you also have, then while that's happening, you also get Tintin. You also get Tintin now, and he's inside Getty's pawn shop, and he's trying to sell a purse to Gideon, and he's like, "So who did you rob this time?" And he goes, "Look, I'll give you $5 for this." Five? I thought you would get at least give me 50 or something. And so basically he winds up flipping him off. He goes, "You ripped a fine motherfucker." Da, 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 da. And so
cousin Darryl, man. I close up for you real good, massa. Fuck you. I'm sorry. I used to know all. I used to recite that movie. Sorry. Okay, we're back.
I love that.
We'll edit that out.
No, we won't. That was gold. that was gold right there. I'm going to use that as a short. but you know what, though? Then he closes up Gideon's, and then the crow, you're thinking that he's going to go into Gideon's right there to kill Tintin or whatever. But no. But he does this. The crow winds up following him. And then you wind up seeing him in the alleyway. And then Eric Draven winds up jumping off the building and landing into the garbage dumpster.
Yes, that's my favorite part. But the way he did it, it's like this graceful flip and his arms were up in the air, Christ-like. And then he fell gracefully in the dumpster. Laughing.
That's how I would want a dumpster dive. That's how I would do.
Who does that? Who falls gracefully from, I don't know how many stories that was, in trash and laughs? as the rain is pitter-pattering on your face. Poetry. It was like Jeff Hardy. Any of the wrestling things, okay. Jeff Hardy, like Poetry in Motion, where he does that, and then that's exactly what Brandon Lee did.
Yeah, I definitely have to agree with you. It's like Poetry in Motion on the way that he does that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But yeah, Tintin is basically obsessed with knives. They engage in a one-on-one alley fight, which Eric wins by catching a knife and pinning Tintin to a wall with it. Eric has Tintin confess that he and the gang were responsible for the break-in and assaulting Shelly, then kills Tintin by stabbing him with all of his own knives. He takes his coat, leaving a large crow-shaped bloodstain on the wall of the alley. Mm-hmm. Eric then goes to the pawn shop where Tintin pawned Shelly's engagement ring, the year before. Now, the thing that I like about this scene with Tintin is the whole entire deal of, and I never miss.
Yeah.
And then he throws the knife, he slaps it down, goes, try harder.
Try harder.
Bats it away.
Catches it right here.
Mm-hmm. That part always gets me.
And then he throws it.
Throws it.
Yeah.
And then goes, victims, aren't we all?
Yeah.
But also too, he goes, yeah, I shagged her. You know, he goes, so what?
Some bitch, some asshole.
And she loved it. And then that just pissed him off even more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, then, I always wonder, how did he find out about the engagement ring? But, you know, he...
But like, you remember, though, in that flashback, too, it does show him asking her to be show the engagement ring.
Okay.
And, of course, he knows that Tintin is there. So the ring might have to be there too, because that place is used for criminals like Tintin to pawn, you know? So that's what I got out of that. And then I like how he goes, victims, aren't we all? And then he goes into the pawn shop and he's banging on Gideon's on thing.
We're closed! It's off!
We're closed, you fucking idiot. And then he opens up the thing, goes, didn't you just hear me? I was rapping at your chamber door. Rapping on your chamber door. But I love that scene though too. Eric was just great.
Yeah. Yeah. Poetry in Motion, like I said.
But yeah, and then he goes, I'm looking for a gold engagement ring. And he goes, suddenly they came tapping as if someone gently rapping on at my chamber door. You heard me rapping, right?
That wasn't rapping, that was banging.
Well, that's just how he does it. That's just how Eric does it.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay.
So then we wind up seeing this scene being played out. And so he takes his... so this is what winds up happening. So after that happens, he winds up... Eric then goes to the pawn shop where Tintin pawned Shelly's engagement ring the year before. Eric focuses the owner, Gideon, to return the ring and blows up the shop, but allows Gideon to live so that he can warn the others. Gideon goes to warn Top Dollar. So, I like also too with this. He goes, I don't know about no fucking engagement ring. He winds up taking a knife, stabbing Gideon's hand to his counter. He goes, I'm looking for an engagement ring, and making him shake his head as he's telling him that.
Yeah,
it was porn a year ago, and I like how he's looking through the engagement rings, and he's like, no, and then finally. You get to, and he has that flashback. And he's like, okay, I got that. Puts it around his neck. He's good to go. He takes the guitar off of Gideon's items. And then he's like, you're street. You're basically, you're nothing but
Street Trash or something like that.
Basically Street Trash is what he tells them.
Yeah, they're gonna kill you, basically.
They're gonna kill your sorry ass. They're gonna kill you.
And is that gasoline I smell?
And then he goes, I'm not gonna kill you. You're gonna warn the others. And then I like how Gideon's trying to get out of his pawn shop, and then just as the fire is about to explode, and it actually makes him bang up against the wall. And then after that, you get the scene of Top Dollar laying next to this girl, naked. And then she's died of she OD'd. And then you see the girl that's also supposed to be his sister. Dude. So now we have Game of Thrones and the Crow.
He said
Game of Thrones was cool.
My father's daughter. So he's it's cool. I can bang her. Okay.
Yeah, and then I like her eyes.
Pretty.
Next thing you know, she takes like out her eyes. Yeah. But then you see Top Dollar and Gideon talking, and he winds up telling him, so you mean to tell me this man with makeup on just let you live? What did you think of that?
Okay, so I had the biggest crush on Top Dollar, but I knew he was bad. But then, it's like his hair. It was like... What do you think about that? You know, but yeah, and sorry, but yeah, that scene, it was interesting the way he killed the pawn shop guy. It was kind of like old school Robin Hood. Did he do this movie before or after Robin Hood? Because I know he was in Robin Hood.
That's right, he did. He played the sheriff of Nottingham's right hand man, right?
Yeah, the villain. He
yeah, that's like 4 years later.
Oh, okay. Well, he stabbed a guy in the neck. In a sword. And then he's like, I'm a vaccine, die. He's like, get a gun and shoot him. Well, he at least told the guy, thank you, who his henchman is Candyman.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I was like, is that Candyman? What are you doing working for him?
But that just goes to show you the layers that he has.
Yeah, Candyman got layers.
Like, I really like him as an Tony Todd.
Yeah,
like him as an actor.
Yeah, okay.
He's has done a lot of stuff for the horror genre and stuff like that.
Say
too.
His government name, okay. him and Michael Wincock in that movie was awesome, and that's why I told you I don't see why they can't brush Michael Wincock off and put some extensions in his hair like they did before in 94.
But this is basically the dialogue between them, okay? Between Gideon and
him. I'm sorry. Okay. You're right.
Sorry.
Thank you.
But you lost everything. Yeah, and maybe you're not such a big shot either. Oh, Jesus. Fair enough. Catch.
Gideon, Jesus. Is this real?
He goes, tell her to last Bella, who couldn't cooperate with me.
You gotta do the hair.
You're telling me this is real? All the power in the world rests in the eyes, Bella. Hmm. If you think about it, Top Dollar is kind of like Shawn Michaels of The Crow. Like, this guy, that's what I feel like.
Whoa, Shawn Michaels. Yeah, with some Triple H sinister. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah, he is. He's very flamboyant and showy. And he gets all the girls, especially his half sister, father's daughter. It's okay to bang her. You mean to tell me this is your sister? Father's daughter. Don't you see the resemblance?
Yeah, I do.
It's like, ugh, gross.
Okay. And then after that, Top Dollar, the local crime boss, and T-Bird's superior, who thinks Gideon is making it all up, and kills Gideon by stabbing him in the throat with their rapier, sinking it into the hilt. Now, you know what my wife said to me? She goes, what is this guy supposed to be? I said, he's supposed to be a gangster. She goes, I never seen a gangster look like that.
I know. He looks fabulous.
I told her, and I started thinking about it. I'm like, well, what about Japanese, Chinese films, though? In a sense of what, that's what I was thinking at first.
Like those samurai movies?
Yeah, something like that. And I think it was very fitting on what they were doing for this film. I thought it suited the character. It was very different.
Now, thinking about it, he does remind me of an anime character. You know, those anime villains, they have like this long hair and they're very lanky.
Yeah.
And they talk flamboyant, like, you know. And then they get all the muscular dudes to do all their bidding for them because they don't want to get dirty, mess up their hair.
Right. It's like a pretty boy, basically.
Yeah, he's like a pretty boy gangster, but he will stab you in the throat now. With a 17th century sword.
Yeah.
He will shoot you.
He will.
That's but his hair going to look good. His hair going to stay good, though. Because he is top dollar.
Yeah, he's top dollar.
Make you holla.
Make you holla.
Honey boo boo.
Maybe if I find you at Dollar Tree.
Not Dollar Tree. See, I ain't gonna get killed for you. Top Dollar gonna come after you.
This is why I'm gonna die. This is why whenever you see me with top dollar, I'm probably gonna be the first one to die.
Yeah, top dollar.
But so Eric finds Fun Boy getting high in an apartment with Darla. He teases Fun Boy, having the man shoot him in the hand and pretending to scream in pain for his own amusement. Now, I like how this scene plays out too, because once again, it feels like a horror movie. It's raining, it's storming. You see a crow near the window, and then all of a sudden in walks Eric under the window. And he goes, Jesus. And he goes,
he goes, right.
You know what I'm talking about.
He goes, Jesus is alive for me. Hey.
He goes, have you heard this one before? And he tells him a joke. And then after that happens,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
But I like how, but you know what though? And then he shoots him in the hand. Yeah. And he's already tripping as is. Mm-hmm. And then his whole entire hand is just closing back up again.
Yes. 90s special effects. I had to kind of get that out, and I was like, okay, cool.
Killed, and he becomes, so then, also too. When it becomes apparent to Fun Boy that Eric cannot be killed, he becomes frightened and Eric disarms him and shoots him in the thigh, piercing his female artery. Eric confronts Darla, making her realize that Sarah needs her to be a good mother. Darla rushes out and goes home. Eric then kills Fun Boy with an overdose of his own morphine.
That scene was powerful. Because he was like behind her in the mirror, and he said, "Mother is the name of God on the lips of children," or something like that.
Yeah.
And then he said, "Morphine's bad for you." And then he made her morphine ooze out of her veins. And I was like, "What the?" I don't know why. I don't remember how dark this was. Maybe I was just in my dark phase, my gothic phase. I was like, "That is so poetic."
Cool. They're so cool.
Yeah, cool, man. And dark. And I was looking at it, I was like, this is some messed up stuff right here, man. Morphine coming out your vein? Dang, this movie got dark.
But I like how he draws the line of, I'm not here for Darla. I'm here for a reason. I'm here to kill Fun Boy. I'm not after anybody else but him. And he knows that Sarah's mother. And she knows that she needs a mother figure. Because number one, and we didn't address this at all, but you see her talking to Albridge and everything before Eric winds up coming out of the grave. And at that same time, Eric is coming out, but he's at that hot dog thing and she's chatting up with Albridge. And then it goes into another scene where basically you see Darla. Mm-hmm. She's at the bar with Darla and she sees her going upstairs with Fun Boy. And she goes, sorry, hon, your mom's on it. He's always on it. It's basically what Sarah says to the bartender.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, too, we also have another scene, too, where basically all of them are drinking. Darla serves them the shots and everything, too. Here's your shooters.
Yeah. Yeah,
and yeah, that was back when Tintin and all them were alive, I believe.
Yeah, alive and happy.
Yeah. But, yeah.
And they swallowed bullets, which I don't know if that's a real drinking game or not, but
I don't want to be part of it.
Know where the bullet would go in their digestion.
I don't know how that would be dissected either.
Yeah.
When you use the bathroom.
Yeah. Oh my god.
But what do you think of the fact that how he draws the line of the fact that she needs her mother? Sarah needs her mother.
It seems like he has a rule, like an unwritten rule about him that he doesn't harm women or children.
Well, like I said, Darla didn't do anything to him. It was these guys that did something to him. So therefore, he has a purpose to just kill the people that he's after.
But even the villain woman, the woman that was the villain, he didn't really do anything to her. I guess he couldn't reach over to her, but I don't know if that's just something written.
I have a speculation on that part.
Okay. All right.
And it didn't take me until like this to go around to actually think about it, mm-hmm. but we'll get into that when we talk about towards the end of it.
Okay, got it.
But... yeah, I like that whole entire scene of him basically getting her off of drugs, and mm-hmm. then she goes on ahead and decides that she doesn't want to do this anymore, and she gets clean and sober within a day. Because the next morning, she's over there making eggs for Sarah, and Sarah, and she goes, "So how do you like your eggs?" She goes, "Why? Why do you care, Darla?"
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, "Fuck this shit. I'm not good at this Mother of the Year shit." And she winds up trying to throw the eggs away. She goes, "I like mine over easy." Okay. So now you see a little bit more of a light into that darkness that was once there.
Yeah.
Now she's more caring for her daughter and trying to be there for her daughter. Over easy. Yeah. Thank you, Sleepy G, for saying over easy.
Well, yeah. I mean, she hasn't had a mother her whole life up until this point. I don't know, she's like 9 or 10 now.
Yeah.
So
all this time I'm staying with Eric and Shelly.
Yeah. So I would be thinking, what's wrong with you today? You
also
here.
Like too how she tells Fun Boy, he goes, "I already had dinner. I had it with the police. I had it with the police."
Yeah. And then her mom is like in a nightie or whatever, yeah, in her bar clothes, making out with Fun Boy mm-hmm. before they go upstairs. It's like, ugh. But I think that Eric Draven should have like a rehab clinic, because he got her clean and sober in a day.
Right.
So he should do that. Some kooky nightmarish thing to all the drug victims, and they'll be clean and sober in a year.
Right. There won't be any more rehabs. If he's done in like a day, boom.
Boom. Your bill's in the mail.
And then all of a sudden, what does he do? He just pops up in the mirror and goes, "Mother's lips of the
Are you using
Sometimes again? Sometimes he quotes it, then he winds up draining.
Yeah, are you using again? Do we have to go through this again? No. Oh my god, I put it down. Please don't come back over here with that crow.
But yeah, and then also too, I forgot to mention this though too, with Gideon, with the first altercation with Albridge, because remember, he winds up blowing up the pawn shop. Gideon winds up, Albridge winds up seeing him leave, and he goes, "Freeze, hold it right there." He goes, "And I say I'm dead, and I move. And he goes, "What the fuck are you supposed to be?" And then some kids make some noise, and he looks over to them, and then he's gone. He goes, "Some stupid creature in the middle of the night." They're scaring the hell out of him. But yeah.
It's just the way he said it. What the fuck are you supposed to be?
But yeah, then he visits Albert, explaining who Eric then also goes over to Albert's apartment and explains who he is and why he is here. Albert tells him that he knows about Shelley's death and that we wanted, and he watched her as she suffered for 30 hours before dying. Eric touches Albert and receives from him the pain felt by Shelley during those hours after leaving. And that scene alone still gives me goosebumps, still makes me sad. And yes, in the remake, they're going to extend the relationship out. To be honest with you, I like the settledness of it. And even Brandon Lee liked the settledness of it and how we wanted it done like that. And I love that aspect to it. And then I like how he goes, little things used to matter to Shelley. I used to think they were trivial. Believe me, nothing is trivial. Yeah. That was improv by Brandon Lee.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
That was not even in the script.
Yeah. Yeah, because didn't his fiance die before he made this?
Yeah, I believe so. I'm not 100% sure on that part.
Okay, it's starting to make sense now. Because, was it Albridge or whatever the cop's name is? Yeah. He was just telling him, you know, this picture of my ex-wife, we got divorced, blah, blah, blah. And then he just went into this nostalgic, like, little things matter to her, and I didn't know why until now.
Right.
Like, yeah. It was deep. Sweet. Yeah, it was deep and sweet. And it's 30 hours of pain, like, just feeling that through somebody's eyes is on a deeper level itself, you know?
It really is, man. Like, you know, I just thought of the fact that he goes, look, man, I was there. I thought you would come out of it. I stayed there. He goes, you were there the whole time. He goes, yeah, I was there the whole time. And I always get teared up during that scene.
Yeah.
Too. And it's like, someone actually gives a shit. It's basically what I'm getting from that. To care enough to actually stay there, not just for an investigation to find out what's going on, because you genuinely care, even though you never even met this person. You care about it. You care about your job. You care about what you're doing. And his ball bag, chief over there.
Oh,
his ball bag chief, who winds up asking him, he goes, "What the?" Whenever they found Tintin with all the knives and everything. He goes, what the hell is that? He goes, I call it blood, Lieutenant. But I guess you would write it up as graffiti.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, it reminds me of the cop in Die Hard. Like, the wise...
Carl Winslow?
Yeah. And you're going to find yourself on the beat again. I'm like, oh, my God. Yeah, he should have been.
I have a theory on that, but I'm not going to get into that.
Yeah, he should have been in the Crow. Yeah, you're right. You're right. He should have been in Crow. Bruce Willis should have been the Crow. Yeah.
No, I wasn't going to go that deep on it.
Oh, okay.
You're a beat cop and stay a beat cop. Yep, that's right, Mike. That's right. That's what the lieutenant tells him. You're a beat cop, so stay a beat cop. And he goes, and then after that, that's when he goes back to that line of saying, I guess I have you to thank for it, don't I? I like how he throws that shade out to him.
Shade.
And then I like how also too, when he's talking to Albridge, he's telling him cigarettes are bad for you. And he winds up telling him to stop smoking. And then he winds up turning his back again to drink a beer, and then he leaves.
Oh, you're talking about when Eric was
when he's
at his apartment. Yeah. He's like, these things will kill you.
Yeah, these things will kill you.
It was like, okay. Are you going to get out? Are you going to jump out the window again? I thought I'd use your front door.
So I could feel like I'm a human being for once.
Yeah, I'm starting to feel human now.
Right?
I'll use your front door.
And then after that, as T-Bird and Skank stop at a convenience store to get some supplies, Eric arrives and kidnaps T-Bird.
I'm sorry.
Where's Fun Boy? He's probably banging away on old Darla. that poor toll just got assaulted, and he didn't even have, they didn't even ask for it.
Yeah, I got impregnated too.
Yeah,
it was a bunch of change gonna pop out.
But I like. And then after that happened, and then you also, I like how he goes and he winds up taking T-Bird, and they're basically what winds up happening. He winds up carjacking him, and then they wind up. And then after that, I like how Skink goes, "What the hell is going on?" So next thing you know, he winds up to check somebody.
What did that poor shit?
You know what though? This is a friend that I want. This is a friend that I want. Like, if I'm getting carjacked, I'm getting kidnapped by somebody that I know that is, and you know that I'm just taking off for no apparent reason. This is the friend that I want right here. He was dedicated to
did that whole thing. And he gets hit by
a little small ass car too, like a little Focus or something at that time.
He gets hit by the car. He's like, "Hey, what's your problem, stupid ass hair?" And then I told you that's my insult from now on. That is the oddest thing to say.
And then after that happens, T-Bird Skank follows the pair and sees Eric as he ties T-Bird to the driver's seat of a car, straps explosives to him, and lets the car drive off the pier, where it explodes in midair and falls in and sinks into the harbor down below. Eric leaves a fiery symbol in the shape of a crow burning at the scene. Now, I like how he goes, "You're dead. There's no coming back. There's no coming back.
There's no coming back, man.
Do that thing.
There's no coming back, man. You died, man.
We watched you.
We saw you. I was like, man, why you had to put a duct tape that high on the man head? He can't see. Well, he dead now, but still.
Oh, man. Then after that, Sarah goes to Eric's old apartment. And we already talked about the mother and the repair of the strain of the relationship, which led to believe the improves thanks to Eric's words. Sarah goes to Eric's old apartment and talks to him. She tells him that she misses him and Shelly. Eric explains that even though they cannot be friends anymore, he still cares about her. Skank goes to the top dollar, who controls all the criminal gangs in the city. So, let's talk about the fact that, you know, it goes, I like how it has that song, it can't rain all the time, playing.
Yeah, can't rain all the time.
And goes, Eric, I know you're here, and there's the cat.
What was that?
It's like, Eric, I know you're here. And he goes, and then she goes, the stupid anyways. And
she, screw you, I thought you cared, man. Sarah, I do care. Eric.
I felt a little bit of Edward Scissorhands moments in that when we're pegging her. I felt like a little bit of Edward Scissorhands. I'm not finished.
But you know, although he is a ghost, he feeds his cat.
Yeah, he does.
I don't know how the cat survived all this time. Year later. Either,
but hey.
But he getting food now.
But I like how Skank goes over to the top dollar.
Why they named that man that? Okay.
But what do you think of Skank talking to Top Dollar?
This would be a drinking game. Oh, when he was describing everything. Oh, man, and then this. And then Top Dollar was like, maybe we should videotape it.
Oh, yeah. That's him. but it looked different.
He was playing like a white whore. That go-go get my head in it. Yeah, ain't no ghost. I told you the whole movie. I used to just do all that.
But I pissed him down. He flashed fried T-Birds. So he fried T-Birds to his fucking car. Oh, T-Bird, here's to you, buddy. Then this is, like you said, top dollar. It would be on to just videotape this, play this bag in slow motion. And then, did you see the grave? Grange looking at him, empty.
Go ahead. Oh my gosh.
It's not fair. It's Fun Boy's fault. That boy was out of control. Keeper, he came in and said,
I gotta get that guy's autograph. Are you Spank from The Crow? You fired
me. Like one thing that he didn't want to have as a credit. I was known as Skank.
I played an actor named Spank in The Crow.
That's not who you are.
I was acting.
I'm a Shakespearean actor.
Okay.
But yeah, he controls the criminal gangs in the city. Top Dollar and his lover, half-sister, Maisa, have become aware of Eric's actions through various reports and witnesses. Top Dollar holds a meeting with his associates where they discuss new plans for Devil's Night's criminal activities. Eric arrives at the meeting looking at Skank. Top Dollar orders his men to shoot Eric, and a massive gunfight ensues. Top Dollar escapes quickly with Maisa and Grange, his lieutenant, with Eric kills everyone in the room, including Skank, who is last of all thrown out of a window by Eric, which is very poetic since Eric got thrown out of a window.
Yeah. They not skate. Skate's right here. Skate dead.
Like, he was trying to play it off. Like, he was already, like, somebody else was there.
Yeah.
But I like how Top Dollar is basically just like, okay, I'm bored. And then everybody just goes on there, shoots him, and he goes, and then all of a sudden he just acts like he died. He goes, okay, now back to business.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I like that moment, though, too, where Eric is just pointing to him. Because I'm not here for you. I don't give a shit about your business. I just want him.
And then he says, well, you can't have him. You know, he flips his
head. In a very Shawn Michaels kind of way.
Well, you can't have him.
Hey,
Brandy.
And I don't know why Top Dollar wanted to protect Skank. He's not like a high-level profile guy. This guy would actually rat your ass out.
I think he probably had Skank around for bait. Because he knew he probably coming after him next. No, I don't think he wanted to protect him. They're expendable.
He was in it for himself. Yeah, you got a point there.
Expendable to Top Dollar. All he cares about is his half-sister and his shampoo products. And his weapons.
I don't know. He was believable for... Randy says the guy wasn't believable as a gangster to her.
He's like an anime gangster.
He's basically Shawn Michaels if he was a gangster in The Crow.
Yeah, but and anime like, because right. Like although he's pretty and he flips his hair back and forth, he will stab you through the throat and shoot you.
Mm-hmm. Even though he was going to be at Dollar Tree.
And Lord forgive you. If you get his clothes dirty with just your blood.
But you you know, I like how, like you said, I like how Skank is basically trying to say, "That's not Skank. Skank dead.
Skank right here. Skank dead.
You're right there." And Eric just, and he has that flashback of him being pushed out the window, and then Skank gets pushed out the window, just like Eric gets pushed out the window. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was a very poetic justice of an eye for an eye and two for a two.
Yeah. And insert Thanos, no resurrections this time.
Game over. Flawless victory. So after Eric has finished his quest, he returns to his grave. Sarah goes to say goodbye to him and gives her Shelly's engagement ring. She is then abducted by Grange, who takes her into the nearby church where Top Dollar and Misa are waiting. Though the crow, Eric realizes that has happened and goes to the church to rescue her. Unfortunately, Grange shoots the crow as it flies into the church, making Eric lose his invincibility. Mm. So here's the thing. At first, I was like, okay, well, since he doesn't have no beef with this crew, I thought that was instant where he loses his incredibility. But then after that, I did a little bit more of a deep dive into it. I'm like, okay, so we did shoot the crow. That was the only way that Mesa was able to carry the crow. So that made sense. I thought it was about the fact that he doesn't have any unfinished business anymore. I thought, okay, well, you killed all the men that you had. Mm-hmm. So therefore, there's no reason for you to even go after them now, other than the fact that you have Sarah. So therefore, you lose your immortality. So yeah, that's what I was thinking.
I didn't get it at first. Yeah. Yeah. She was saying in the movie, too, like, his power lies with the crow. And if we capture him, then he'll basically lose his power or whatever.
Right.
But, yeah. And then my favorite part was when he shot the crow. And then Top Dollar was over him. He was like, let me show you what happened. Car.
Bam.
I don't want him to tell me no bedtime stories.
Good thing he doesn't tell. You know what? You thought Major Payne was bad with telling the little engine that can, but Top Dollar just goes on ahead and just...
Bang.
At least with Major Payne, it was like a slow pace before he got to the main part where the engine blows up. Mm-hmm. Top Dollar, he's like, screw that. I'm just going to go right into it.
At least he gave me shadow puppets. Did that a little bit.
So then after that happens, I thought that was actually really good. Then Eric realizes what has happened and goes to the church. Eric loses it. Oh, so Mesa grabs the wounded crow, intended to take its mystical powers. Albrecht arrives, intending to pay his respects to Eric. Just after Eric is wounded, Top Dollar ties up Sarah and climbs the bell tower as a fight ensues with Albrecht killing Grange. Just before she is about to shoot Eric, the crow escapes Mace's grip and claws her eyes out and knocks her down the bell tower, where she hangs on the rope for dear life and she falls to her death. So a lot happens here.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, Albrecht winds up killing Candyman, which is also Grange, and he winds up killing him. He also gets shot, gets wounded, and also Eric is also wounded. Mm-hmm. They also had a plan, though, too. He goes, look, you go in, the original plan was Eric was going to go in front, and Albrecht will go on ahead and go in the back.
Mm-hmm.
Well, go in the back of Eric. First of all, that sounds like a good plan. He goes, wait, I thought you were immortal. Because I thought I was too.
Yeah, I thought they killed the crow too at first.
Me too. But he was only wounded. So, because if you kill the crow, you also kill Eric, because Eric's soul is also attached to the crow.
Yes. I guess they knew not to kill the crow because they wanted the crow's powers.
Yeah. Maybe? Because that's a place off of on part two of City of Angels.
Oh, yeah, I erased part two totally from my mind.
I wish I did. Unfortunately, that part stuck with me, and so was Thomas Jane's performance. The part where she's clawing with a crow claws the sister's eye out and everything, too, is this, okay? So basically, what I was thinking was, since she was so obsessed with the fact that she was cutting people's eyes out, I believe that was her own sins that got the best of her, and so therefore the crow winds up basically clawing out her own eyes.
Yeah, or since the crow and Eric are in sync, maybe he was like, claw her eyes out, like telepathically.
Exactly. That's what I was thinking. I was thinking, well, because of all the stuff that she's done, she's paying for her sins.
Yeah, she was. She did pay, and she pissed the crow off. Because he's like, bitch, did you shoot me?
Exactly.
Yeah. And that's why I'm like the crows, because I don't want them to claw my eye out.
And then when Albert is wounded, Eric climbs to the roof of the church on his own. There, Top Dollar admits ultimately responsibility for what happened to Eric and Shelley. They fight, and in the end, Eric gives Top Dollar 30 hours of pain. He observed from Albert's the sensitive sense, sends Top Dollar flying off the rooftop of the church, where he feels to be and becomes impaled on the horns of a gorgile. After Eric and saves Sarah from falling in the collapsing roof, Albrecht goes to the hospital and Eric is reunited with Shelley at their graves.
Okay, now let me ask you a question.
Okay.
That whole scene where they were in the cathedral, it felt like Batman 89, didn't it?
Okay, yes. Now this part does feel like Batman 1989 because number one, you have the girl who falls down the winds up falling down where the bell is.
Yeah.
And being hung, and then she wants
Yeah. And then they're like fighting on the rooftop, like Batman and Joker did.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And exactly. And then after that, you know, I do feel like that there was like a lot of Batman vibes with that within 1989.
Yeah. Yeah, but Top Dollar had an epic death, though. He died on the horns of a gargoyle. And the blood, his blood spilled out the gargoyle's mouth. So if you want to read deep into that, you can.
Exactly.
But when you were talking about how seeing him, it felt like a samurai movie. He did have a sword on his back.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it does feel like a samurai story and stuff like that, too. Mm-hmm. And also, too, I like how you finally now have the guy who's actually puppeteering this whole entire thing, pulling the strings and telling them what to do. And because of him, he was responsible.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, let's see here. Brandy said that she liked how the guy died at the end. Liked how Top Dollar died.
Yeah, and then he got his hair all wet and stuff.
But this is the quote that I like, though.
Yeah.
You know, my daddy used to say, every man's got a devil. And you can't rest till you find it. What happened back there with you and your girlfriend? I clear that building. Hell, nothing in this town happens without my say-so. So I'm sorry if I spoiled your wedding plans there, friend. But if it's any consolation to you, you have put a smile on my face. And then I like how Eric goes, well, I got something for you. And then that's whenever he tells him, go on ahead, tell him what he says.
Yeah, 30 hours of pain.
Pain.
And then he touches his eyeballs. And then he's like transmitting all the pain he got from Albrecht into him so he can feel all of Shelley's pain for 30 hours. And then that is so overwhelming to Top Dollar that he's like, oh, oh. And he faints. And then he falls on the gargoyle and he dies.
Yep, and I definitely like how the gorgeous.
Exactly, I have.
But yeah, I like how that scene plays out, where basically you see the blood coming out of the gorgile's mouth.
Yeah.
Also, too, let's talk about the rooftop scene, right? Where basically Eric takes the antenna and turns that into like a sword. I love that. I love that. It reminds me so much of Bruce Lee when it comes down to that. It's just felt natural.
Yeah, and Batman.
And Batman, no.
Yeah, very resourceful. Uses anything around him. Yeah. Yeah. We've been talking about Batman this whole time in this whole movie.
There's no we. There's no.
What are you talking about? You're here with me, so there's a we.
Yeah, that's true. I was. But I like that scene. And then I also like the other rooftop scene with the guitar scene, too, with the guitar riff. That was also one of my other favorite scenes. Top Dollar looking over the city, realizing that there's no fire being, and he goes, right now there should have been fire.
Yeah.
But I like that. But yeah, the scene where he winds up dying is really, I really liked how that got played out, where basically he used the pain that he had that was inside him and Eric and made it be where now his pain is now the cause of Top Dollar's death.
Yeah. Yeah, and then it's just like Avatar and The Last Airbender, where you didn't see it, but I'm talking about the anime movie for all the people that watch anime, all the people that watch the cartoon series, where Aang was like with the Fire Lord, and he said, I'm going to take your bending away. And then he like touched him right here, and then he took all his power away. And then the Fire Lord was like, you know, crippled, he didn't have no power. That's kind of how it was itself. The Fire Lord is still alive, but Top Dollar is dead.
Top Dollar is dead. Then later, Sarah pays a final visit to the cemetery. Well, hold on. First, I also like the fact that you actually see Elbridge coming out of the church. She's laying down on the hospital bed.
Yeah.
Not the hospital bed, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I do.
And his lieutenant's there. He goes, what the hell are you doing here? He goes, hey, all your guys are your guy is on the roof. Your vigilante's on the roof. Mm-hmm. And so that happens. And then after that, you see Shelly and Eric reunite. Mm-hmm. And I really like the fact that you have closure now. The grave just goes back to being like a closed grave. Nobody's, it looked like it hasn't been touched or anybody got out of the grave. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that whole thing is interesting now that I'm thinking about it. Because you said in the new Crow movie that's coming out soon, they're going to go into the backstory of just like how this Crow came to be, how this whole thing came to be, like the mystical powers,
right, between the living and the dead, which they did in the graphic novel. They showed a little bit of the dead,
which I need to read the graphic novels.
I only have the Eric Raven one. I don't have the other ones.
Mm-hmm.
but so is there anything else that you want to talk about as far as that scene with Shelly and him?
No, I just thought it was really nice. It was good closure for him because, you know, he did all his work. He killed everybody. And then he's like, oh, I want to take a nap. I want to go back to sleep. And then, you know, she came, you know, like, hey, baby, it's time for us to go back to bed. And then he said,
that's how I feel after playing GTA and doing all my side quests.
Yeah, he's like, oh, I'm tired. All that killing. Oh, good grief. I ain't even eat nothing.
But later, Sarah pays a final visit to the cemetery, and the Crow, perched on Eric's headstone, gives her Shelly's engagement ring, dropping it in her open hand before soaring over the city and into the night. And then that's when we get the quote. If the people who we love are stolen from us, the way to have them live is to never stop loving them. Buildings burn, people die, but real love is forever. And then we hear it can't rain all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I really have to say, I really enjoyed this movie still. Yeah. This movie is, no wonder why this is still a cult following. I see people now catching on to the Crow now and just loving it and falling in love with it the same way we did. And everybody, there's one smart ass person in the comments and everything that I've seen in the trailer goes, the only reason why it was popular is because of the fact that, not in the comments over here.
But, oh, I was like, who?
No. I was looking at comments like in the remake or the and stuff like that of the trailer. It's like, the only reason why this is popular is because Brandon Lee died. I'm like, no, you're missing the whole point. And we actually covered the whole point of why we love this film. But yeah.
That person.
But all in all, it's still a great film. I still love it. I ordered, I pre-ordered the Steelbook.
What? That's a Steelbook?
Yeah, there's a Steelbook coming out for the 30th anniversary of The Crow.
It's been 30 years? Dang. Yep.
And believe it or not, the weird thing is he died on the 31st of March.
What? Oh my God.
So that's kind of weird that we timed it in this kind of way, but we didn't even plan it.
Yeah. So what are we going to do for the 31st of March? Like, do we like listen to The Cure and wear all black and stuff?
That sounds like a good idea. You know what though? I have a friend of mine that's going to be giving me a bunch of Crow merch coming in and everything. So yeah.
What? Dang. Yeah, I saw the little Crow figures. I wanted one in my office.
Get this. They actually have a hot toy now that's $100 now. It used to be like, it used to be $500. Now it went down to like $100.
Jeez. No. My goodness. I have to wait to he get to be $10.
But anyways, I know that you have some trivia for us. Is there anything
yes, I have trivia assignments. Okay, let's see. John and everyone, did you know in the early version of the script for the film, the character Sherry from the comic book was initially 11-year-old girl named Ellie, but in the film, it's Sherry, and she's 13. Her name, Sarah.
Yep. They changed it up.
Yeah, that was a minor change. In the early version of the script, the relationship between Sarah and Eric was closer to the way it is in the comic.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Okay, and the bird used in the film are actually ravens, not crows. My God, they should have called this the raven.
No, then after that you get mixed up with Edgar Allan Poe.
I can't believe how deceived we were.
We were very deceived.
What's the raven's name? Did they say what the raven's name was?
No.
Okay.
But
we'll call him George.
Okay, George.
You want me to do one more?
Yeah, do one more.
Okay. Okay, so originally Sarah and Eric were supposed to sit in front of a fireplace in Eric and Shelley's old apartment. Did I say Shelby or Shelley?
Whatever.
Shelly's old apartment. Eric was supposed to explain to Sarah why he couldn't be friends with her anymore. In the actual film, Sarah wanders through the apartment by herself while talking to Eric. Sarah's about to leave when Eric doesn't respond and she stops. And that's when Eric appears to her in the window and tells her he cares about her.
So, Eric and Shelly's death scene, originally, Eric was supposed to return home after grocery shopping and walk into the apartment completely unsuspectingly when he gets shot by Fun Boy. In the actual film, Eric returns home sensing something is amiss and he is stabbed by Tintin when he throws a knife at Eric as soon as Eric walks through the door. But because of what happened and everything, they had to cut that because of him passing away on the set of that scene.
Yeah, because in the movie, he opens the door and then Tintin throws a knife at him. So it was that scene, the beginning scene. Well, they shoot movies out of order.
They do, and then they edit and everything in post, and then they put it up.
Yeah, because he shot most of all his scenes, maybe except three or four. Maybe he had that much left. Yeah.
But another interesting fun fact is James O'Barr, the guy who made the Crow comic, mm-hmm. used that as a coping mechanism to get over the grief of his loss of his wife, of his girlfriend, because a drunk driver hit her.
Does he still make those series?
He does have a couple of series out and everything and stuff like that, yeah. too, of the Crow comics.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Okay, I may check them out.
Okay. Well, guys, that's going to be it as far as our review for The Crow. This is our deep review of The Crow. I hope that you guys enjoyed this. We enjoy talking about it. As a matter of fact, I might actually do an unboxing video of the 4K whenever I get it in and stuff like that, so that way you guys can see that, because I did that with John Wick Chapter 4 thing that I got from Walmart, and so I might actually do that with this too. Don't forget to boop that like button. Don't forget to boop that subscribe button. And always until next time, guys. Have a great and safe night. Thank you again, Tamika, for joining me. Bam, I'm dead. Okay.
Top dollar, make you holla.
Holla, holla. Go to Dollar General. Okay, I'm going to go.